Hey everyone, it's Chronically Me. Welcome back to another episode of the podcast. Today I've got a friend with me who has experienced chronic illness and mental illness. Did you want to say a bit about yourself? Maybe like your diagnosis or how it affects you, what sort of symptoms you experience?
So I was diagnosed when I was 4 years old with complex PTSD. I was also diagnosed with autism, and I was also diagnosed with severe anxiety and depression. It was pretty early on that I was diagnosed. I think the earliest was about 4 years old. It really mentally affected me, especially my childhood. I barely got out of the house. My mother wouldn't let me go anywhere, wouldn't let me make friends. It pretty much tarnished whatever communication I had into the public world. But I don't try and necessarily let that affect me so much. I try and work through it. I try and push through some of the anxious moments that I have. I don't have as many flashbacks I used to have as a kid, which is very complex PTSD or any form of PTSD. To do with my depression really, it started off early, but it mainly showed itself as a young adult.
And so when you got diagnosed at 4 years old, because that is quite young, did you understand what that meant, or like how did you interpret that?
I had no idea what it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I was so traumatized that I would lash out at anyone that would touch me or even talk to me or even go near me. I had no idea what it was like or what I was doing or
Yeah, it would have been really actions. Confusing. Yeah, so you were in the foster system at a younger age. I'd be really interested if you're willing to speak about it, about how that system is in Australia, particularly for disabled individuals.
So the foster care system for me was very different. It not necessarily wasn't the best situation. I was taken out of my mother's care when I was only 12 years old. I was extremely malnourished. I was extremely underweight. I was the same weight of an 8-year-old at the age of 12.
Yeah.
I was then told that if one of my family didn't take me, I would have been held off to Perth and put into a strict girls' home, a girls-only home. And then I most likely wouldn't have been able to see my family again. I was with my auntie's care for 7+ years. Until she couldn't handle it anymore. She had 6 kids of her own, including me, which is 7, and she was just dealing with too much.
Yeah, that is a lot.
I was then put into another foster home, this time with a much older lady, another family friend of ours. She was really lovely. I spent from the age of 16 to the age of 18 at her house, and then I left, and I've been out of the system since.
And how did you experience, like, within that system, the understanding of mental health and how to accommodate trauma
really
care?
They didn't tell me anything. They were completely useless with their information. They were not doing me well. My mother completely stopped showing up to visitations. After a while, DCP just kind of got fed up with it and just didn't want to deal with it anymore.
Did they provide any education to the people who were looking after you about trauma-informed care and like what you were going through?
So
how
they were getting
you?
Payments for looking after me, but they weren't necessarily getting the correct funding that they were needing for me, especially with how traumatized I was, to be able to help me with my situations. So I needed extensive physical and mental, and both were extremely hard on my auntie and extremely expensive, and they just were not trying to cover it or making excuses about it. I've had several social workers that were horrible. I only recently really got a really good social worker when I was 17. She was obviously a lot older and was still somewhat new about it. She was trying her best. I mean, I'd get fundings to be able to go on camps and stuff, but I would be so misbehaved and so traumatized that I would eventually end up getting kicked out after 2 days because I would have either threatened with someone or hurt someone. They just couldn't control how traumatized I was as a kid. They just didn't have the resources for it.
Yeah. What do you wish that they would have had, like, what knowledge or resources in order to support you?
I honestly wish they had a more understanding on childhood trauma, especially on the way it affects a child. I mean, not necessarily the physical effects, but the mental effects that it can cause a child. I mean, I've seen firsthand myself and through my family how much it can really destroy a family.
Yeah, absolutely. So I obviously haven't been in the same situation, but I've been doing a cert for community services, and we talk a lot about trauma-informed care and how it affects a person. And you're absolutely right that, you know, it can cause behaviors that you don't really have control over that are, you know, maybe damaging to yourself or others. And being able to manage those and, like, ground the individual. I think, yeah, do you think it would have been helpful for the people supporting you, but for you as yourself, if that had been explained to you?
It would have given me at least a little bit of a more understanding on what I'm going through. They just threw things at me, not knowing, without me even knowing some of this stuff. I mean, I had to grow up so fast. I mean, by the time I was 12, I had to act like an adult sometimes because, and even though I wouldn't act like an adult because I was so traumatized, I would have to be tough and act fine.
So having experienced all of this, you've mentioned that some of these systems aren't particularly beneficial or that you wish people knew more about trauma-informed care. Now that you're an adult, what have you learned and how do you manage the mental illnesses that you have?
At the moment, I've tried medications. Medications don't work for me as much as they work for maybe a few weeks to a month to a couple of months, like they normally should, because usually with any type of medication, it usually takes a few weeks to a few months to actually work in your system. But my body is just, after a while, it just gets so used to the medication being in my system that it just doesn't work anymore.
Yeah, I have heard that.
Or I find that the symptoms, like the depressive symptoms, get 10 times more worse when I'm on the medication.
So how are you managing the anxiety, the depression and PTSD without these medications?
Without these medications, I don't go out very often. That's one way I help my anxiety. As much as I do go out, I try not to go out as often for long periods of times. I try and give myself like 30 minutes each few hours to go out because it just gets too overwhelming for me to be out in public.
Yeah, so it's managing what you can do reasonably.
Yeah, it's pretty much what I can manage in a day, bit by bit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've known that I've really had to do that, say, for my physical health to, you know, that pacing of like, oh, I can do a little bit, but I can't do everything, and just working within your limits.
I mean, it's definitely a struggle because, like, some days I'm like, I want to go out and I want to meet people and I want to be able to go communicate with people, but just having that much of a bit debilitating anxiety that to the point you cannot move from the spot you're in, it's hard.
Yeah, absolutely. Have you found any techniques that help you during those moments of anxiety?
So those moments of anxiety, most of the time you'll find me in a confined small spot listening to music.
Yeah,
that's usually my thing. If I get anxious, you'll find me in a cramped corner. Like, usually it's somewhere small that I can barely fit into.
Mm-hmm.
Because I just like the feeling of being...
being secure.
Being secure.
Yeah, and music has been really helpful, I know, like, for myself, but so many other people, that it's, yeah, very distracting, but also validating, but also, like, yeah, just really good to listen to.
Yeah.
Great, that's been helpful for you. What would your advice be to other people who are experiencing similar things to you?
Try your best. Yeah. Don't take everything to heart. Just keep doing what you're doing. Don't give up.
Yeah. You had good social workers and bad social workers. What was the difference between those two?
So, the difference between a bad and good, it's probably different to others,
mm-hmm.
but to me, the social worker I first had when I was young was completely incompetent, didn't know what the hell she was doing, dragged things out to an extended period, refusing treatment and care for me, refusing to pay my auntie, and refusing to pay the people that were looking after me and the people that were trying to give me the care.
Mm.
And the people that, the good support workers, they have been trying their hardest to give me that treatment, even though it wasn't given to me early on.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
At the moment, they still cover some of my medical and financial help until I'm 25. But I don't technically am under them.
Mm-hmm.
But they are supposed to still help until you're 25.
Yeah. No, that's really interesting, because I know that, like, say, foster care systems and disability support in other countries are often underfunded. But, yeah, it seems like it's the same in Australia.
Yeah.
So you're supported by the NDIS, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah. What was that process like in getting onto the NDIS?
It was very hard. Hundreds and hundreds of dollars, thousands even, hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of medical treatment, hospital visits, doctor's visits, specialist visits, until eventually I met the criteria of being able to be funded under the NDIS. I had to get a clinical diagnosis of PTSD. They had to make sure that I had PTSD. They had to make sure that I had the depression, that I had the anxieties, that I had the autism, that I had dyslexia. That they had to make sure that I wasn't lying about my medical conditions. And it's, a lot of people don't understand how time-consuming it can be to have to put in all this information and go to doctors after doctors after doctors to even just possibly get turned around and refuse treatment, or told you're crazy, or told that you're loony and that there's nothing wrong with you.
Yeah, getting a diagnosis is a really extensive process, and I really faced that too. So yeah, what was that like, I suppose, yeah, trying to get that validation from doctors to listen to you and that sort of thing?
It's hard, and it still is. I'm an adult now, and it's still extremely hard to be able to get treatment. I mean, mental health is barely talked about as much as it is talked about. It's not really talked about in that much depth on how much people can struggle. There's a lot of people around here that say they want to help people with anxiety, PTSD, all sorts of, like, different chronic illnesses, pains and stuff, or chronic illnesses, different types of mental disorders, but then they'll turn around and tell you that you're crazy, or that they don't think that you have this, or they call you a liar. Like, there's always a worry in the mental health aspect that people are just going to turn around and say you're just fucking crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really invalidating, kind of makes you question the experiences you have. But it's also really horrible because, you know, a doctor meets you for an hour at most, but you have to live with this, and, like, you know yourself what you're experiencing.
Yeah.
Just from, like, knowing you, you've talked about how the NDIS helps, like, fund different treatments that you need, so like physio and chiro and that sort of stuff. So when you're signed, when you've like the NDIS has said like yes, you're, you know, you meet the criteria, then you make a plan. So is that in that process where you say what sort of stuff you want access to?
It depends on the NDIS plan. The NDIS plan has, so depending on your disabilities, it's depending on what the NDIS thinks or what they believe that you need in assistance. So in my assistance, I don't need 24/7 care like some people do need. Some people need complete 24/7 care and have to have someone there completely, where in my aspect I have that little bit more freedom. I can live in my own house, I can do my own things, I can drive around without having to be worried about people wondering where I am or what I'm doing. But in the instance, I have quite a lot of say. Like, obviously there are some bits that obviously I don't have say in, especially if it's an emergency and it's a life or death situation and they need to make a decision now and I'm not available. But most of the time I have decisions on what I want to do.
Yeah, like, excellent.
I have decisions on where I want to live or what I want to do or the ideas I want to do with my fundings or activities I want to do or holidays I want to go on. Yes, I have to ask for permission because I'm a guy, I'm what's called a ward of the state, which means I have a legal guardian that looks after me. But it still means I can still be able to go out as not, I can't do as much as I want to do because I have to ask, but I can still do quite a lot of things. I can still be able to function and use the fundings that I get from my NDIS plan to help me grow as a person and help also help me with my abilities and the stuff that I need.
Yeah, awesome. And I suppose then, are you on disability pension as well to help cover like rent and groceries and stuff?
I'm on the disability pension, so I get rent assistance as well.
Yeah, excellent. So what is it like now that you're on the NDIS? How does that function and how does it support you?
So at this current moment, I get support. I get support about 4 or 5 days a week.
And what does that support do?
So that support helps me with day-to-day things. So like things around the house, shopping, appointments, things I need to go to. They also help me with medical forms, medical appointments that I need to go to, even going as far as if needed, like if they have the time and funding and thinking to do it, they will also set up a support for overnight if I need. But I have to make sure that I have, like, obviously through the NDIS fundings that can cover it. There's certain aspects, I guess, to the NDIS that you can get on plans of support and help and disability aid you can get, really.
Awesome. And what are some things that you like about the support that you're currently receiving?
It's hard to explain because coming from my childhood, I never really got much support. So the support I'm getting, it's in a way very uncomfortable, but I'm trying to let that support come in because after being not supported for all those years, it's just very awkward and uncomfortable to actually have people that care about you, that actually want to do good for you, that aren't just leave you when you're in your lowest time. It's hard to find people that actually care about you and not lying about it or not trying to get in there just to manipulate you.
No, it's really good. Yeah, you are receiving that support and you're kind of starting to learn that it is okay to trust people, particularly when you've had their experience when you haven't been able to. And I think you really speak to, like, for people who are on the worker side, that consistency and following through on your promises is really important. Is there anything else from the worker side or for people who are foster carers for them to know?
Just hang in there. Give the child all the support you can give them. They're gonna struggle a lot. They're probably not gonna open up to you straight away.
Mm-hmm.
Just give them time. Just let them know that you're gonna be there for them. Don't push them into speaking to you if they don't want to.
Yeah.
Because it's always gonna hurt them more.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that you have dyslexia and autism. Did you want to talk a bit about your experience with neurodivergency and what's it's like navigating the world with that?
It's very different. I mean, I always knew that I was different from a kid. As mm-hmm. a kid, I would do little stemming moments where I would shake my hands around or I would bounce on a spot. And back when I was young, it wasn't as common.
Mm, yeah,
it wasn't really as talked about as much.
It was seen as weird.
It was seen as weird or a behavioural disorder, or it was commonly found as a behavioural disorder. Same with ADHD and ADD. They call it people take the word ADHD or ADD as they're not going to listen, they're not going to sit down, they're not going to sit still, they're misbehaved, when in fact, they can't help it. It's not what they can do, it's what their brain, it's the chemicals in their brain.
Mm.
And I've heard a doctor talk about it, saying that if he could change the name, he would, because the name for ADHD and the name for, like, autism is a name of insult to the actual medical condition itself.
Yeah, so having that real strength-based approach, and rather than being like, oh, they can't do this, they can't do that, and kind of writing them off, which you've been like, how can I support them in this?
Exactly. Like, not everybody, especially with autistic people,
mm-hmm.
we have really hard times trying to keep our emotions intact, especially if we get overwhelmed. We get overstimulated by sounds or smells or tastes, or even just being touched. Sometimes we can get too overwhelmed and lash out. It's not the fact that we want to hurt the person. It's just our brain cannot control all that built up emotion at once.
Yeah, so there's a lot of like understanding and like education that needs to be done around how to support neurodivergent individuals. Is there anything that helps in terms of accommodations for your neurodivergence, or things that you like to do that helps, you know, prevent overwhelm?
So what helps me from being overwhelmed, especially if I don't have special like earphones to help me with noise cancellation, mm-hmm. I tend to step out of the loud situations, give myself 10 to 15 minutes, even 20 minutes to just breathe,
mm-hmm.
relax or something, and then come back, because then it gives my mind time to wind down enough to just give my brain a second. Sometimes if I get overstimulated too quickly, it's a lot harder to stop myself from being overstimulated, because it's just happened so quickly mm. that I can't control it. But usually in situations like that, I try to remove myself before it gets too late.
Yeah, and I suppose knowing your triggers is a really big part of that, and yeah, taking, you know, kind of like a diagnosis of yourself, or being like, I'm feeling quite overwhelmed at this moment, I'm gonna step out for a bit. And what would you like to see from other people, whether that's workers or friends or family?
I see quite a lot of support in a way in some places about autism. I would love to see a lot more support on that, because autism and ADHD and anxiety and depression, they're not talked about a lot in like depth to the point that people really understand what that person is going through mm-hmm. until either they have it themselves or have someone in their family that have it.
Yeah, there's nuances out there. And I know you have like a learning disability. What's that been like in you know, especially like in adulthood, like all the different forms and understanding information. Yeah,
so it's been really hard. My main form of intellectual issues is my dyslexia.
Mm-hmm.
It means I find it extremely hard to write and read. And I find myself struggling with it a lot as an adult. What I do to help with that is I ask people for the spelling of things. Mm. Even if it annoys people, I'll be like, excuse me, I'm sorry, I can't spell this. Can you help me?
Yeah.
Or I look it up or I try and Google it as best I can. If I don't spell it correctly, I'm sure Google will find it, like the name of it, or I can search it up in a dictionary or yeah. something.
So, and what's that like in terms of medical appointments and especially navigating all these different like funding services and stuff of, you know, receiving all this information and being able to interpret that?
It's definitely been hard.
Mm-hmm.
I had to learn quite a lot from a young age. I mean, I was in and out of hospitals from the age of 4 onwards up till I think I was just before I was 18 or just before I was 17. So I pretty much knew every medical condition, everything that I had to do in and out of hospitals, every operation and procedure I've had. I know for a fact that my medical information at hospitals
mm-hmm.
are about 3 whole pages about this big.
Yeah, holding about 15 centimetres with hands far apart.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, it's just an audio-based thing.
Like, I have had trolleys full of medical information that I've had to, like, look at and go through.
So having it's, that time to look
at it. It's still confusing, but I always get help and I try and organise it the best as I can. Because mm-hmm. if I put it in dates, then I can know, right, this happened this day. There's what happened. This happened this day. There's all the information of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, excellent. So, yeah, having the time to be able to, like, sit through it and think about it.
Yeah.
You also have fetal alcohol syndrome. What's yeah. that been like? Because a lot of the information doesn't apply to adults. It's only, like, in the early years. So if you want yeah. to speak to both aspects of that.
So I don't know quite a lot about fetal alcohol syndrome because I wasn't taught a lot or told a lot. But it is caused by excessive use of alcohol while the mother is pregnant.
Yeah.
It causes intellectual disabilities. Same thing as if a parent was to take drugs while their child is inside mm-hmm. them.
Yeah.
It's just, it causes a lot. Like, any child is obviously has a risk of being born with intellectual disabilities, but it is higher,
mm-hmm.
especially in alcohol consumptions. Too much alcohol in the bloodstream, especially for a baby, can kill them straight mm-hmm. out.
Yeah. No, and do you think that the fetal alcohol syndrome kind of plays into learning disabilities and communication
yeah.
skills?
Yeah.
And you mentioned that you're a ward of the state and that you have a legal guardian. When was that put in place and what's that like?
What does that mean? So that was put in place when I was 16.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kept to me until I'm 25.
Yep.
I'm currently on the works of trying to get away from them because they're not the best of people. Not the guardians so say, but the group that's involved with the guardianships and the people that also help them aren't the nicest people.
Is that an individual level or an organizational level?
Organizational level.
Okay. And you just because you feel that like you're able to make your own decisions I've just
been discriminated in a way by so I also have a public trustee, which mm-hmm. helps cover my money and my fundings and helps me with my rent and what I do with my money. But they have so much of a strict hold on my money that they barely let me spend anything. I get allowance once a week, and that allowance is what I have to have to cover me for the whole week.
Mm-hmm.
And half the time, barely even covers my food shopping. On top of the other medical stuff and medical treatment that I need on top of it,
yeah,
it literally goes within the first day of getting it. and
yeah, I have heard that, like, a lot of people on, like, NDIS or, like, you know, the money that they get covers the bare essentials, if that.
Yeah, exactly. It's covering the bare essentials that I need. And as much as I told them that, like, I've been to financial counselling, I've been to see a financial advisor to help me with my money and my budgeting, and I budget really well, but it's just a process that I have to go through to get a norms from them. So I have to go to a jury that's up above them to say, hey, I need to get out of here. This is not right, the way they're treating me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to have evidence on proved on misconduct, especially in this way, because as soon as I tell them that there has been misconduct, it goes straight into the process of getting sorted.
Mm-hmm.
So if I go through the process and have to keep getting the evidence over and over again, or they have to keep finding the evidence, and it's going to be harder for me to get away from them, and they're most likely to use that against me to say, no, she's just crazy and she doesn't know how to use her money, or she's, you know, people nowadays use mental health issues to call you crazy,
mm-hmm.
and to say that you can't look after yourself, or that you can't look after your own money. It's not that. It's they're painting an image on you that's not true.
Yeah, so is there a way to get annulled from the trustee without, you know, if there wasn't an instance of misconduct, or that's the only way to follow the process?
The only way I can get out is if I say that I've been mistreated.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's the only way I can get out, or I have to wait till I'm 25 and then prove to them that I can. So with the annulment, I have to go to them, tell them that about the mistreatment, and I also got to provide to them that I am able to look after my own money as well. So,
and why did they put this in the first place when you were 16?
My auntie put this in place in the first place because when I was younger, I was assaulted, mm-hmm. and I came into hand of, they call it a compensation fund,
mm-hmm.
for people who have been assaulted as a child, or I don't know if they do it as an adult. I'm not sure about that. But I got a hefty amount of money from the government because of that, and my auntie was worried that the people around me and my friends and family would go after my money.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And in that instance, they trusted the trustees to look after my money, and in end, they're the ones that are using me for my money.
Because the trustee controls when and where you can spend your money.
Yeah, they pretty much control when and where I can spend my money and how much I can spend.
Yeah, because typically it's for people who aren't able to do that for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And what's the difference between having a legal guardian and having a trustee?
So a guardian, they pretty much tell you where and where you can and cannot go. They have legal guardianship over you. So if something happens to you, they are at fault for whatever happens.
They're responsible for you, kind of like in the way that a parent would.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. And has that been beneficial for you? Is there anything about the system that you'd like to change or you wish they did differently?
There are some aspects about the system that I definitely want to change. I've noticed more and more, especially as I'm an adult now, and I've noticed things that I haven't really seen as a kid, or I've been too naive to see. But I've also noticed that a lot of the disability, the people with disabilities or mental health issues, are getting used and manipulated. It's happened to me in the fact that I've had groups of people, higher up people, that say they're gonna look after me and then totally ghost me and not do anything and force me to sign contracts that I don't want to sign, or make me do things that I don't want to do, or make me go to events that I don't want to go, or do support that I don't want to do, or just rock up without even me asking them to rock up. They're just completely neglective. And I've noticed it more and more in some ways of support groups, that some of the support groups are more eager for the money that the people are getting or giving for the care than the care and treatment of the people.
Yeah, I'm really sorry you had that experience. It sounds like, yeah, they're not really valuing your autonomy and personal choices, and just kind of doing what they think was best rather than like what you actually need.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that's definitely like a big thing that gets talked about, but it has to actually happen practically, is that, you know, you are an adult and you do get to decide what you want to do and which services you want to sign up for, and that should be respected. You wanted to talk about in terms of like how you manage your daily life or what it's been like experiencing these things or anything else that's important to you?
Not really.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thank you for being so like open and honest and answering all my questions.
Happy to be here.
Yeah. Yeah, any like just day-to-day little tips and tricks that help?
Just keep pushing through. It's honestly is my biggest goal.
Mm-hmm.
I try and tell, as much as I don't believe it myself, I try and tell myself, push through it. Each day is a new day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Every day is a new day. Just because I've also learnt this from a TV show as well. The reason why they call today the present, because it is a gift.
Mm, I like that. And you have all the skills from yesterday, today.
The past is the past. Today is a gift. Because it is called the present.
Yeah, I like that.
And I always look to the fact that the present is coming and each day is a new day.
Mm-hmm.
And just because that day was so bad, a new day is going to happen and yesterday doesn't even matter.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, every day is another step forward.
Yeah.
And you learn from like the yesterdays, and yeah, it sounds like you've learned, you know, or am learning to like, yeah, manage the symptoms that you're experiencing in different ways that, yeah, is helpful to you. Thank you for coming and sharing.
You're welcome.
Don't know a lot about the systems that within Australia, like the NDIS and disability pension, because I haven't really interacted with them. So it's been really great to hear about that.
Yeah.
As well as, I think mental health often is talked about in terms of, like, I feel like there's such a spectrum of mental health issues, and often the deeper end isn't talked about as much. Yeah. So it's been really great to hear from you.
Awesome.
Thank you very much. And that brings us to the end of the episode. Thank you so much, and a shout out to my friend for being so vulnerable and honest and sharing all that information with us. It's really interesting to see the ways these systems work and how they set out to support people, but also the shortcomings that sometimes come with that. Join us next time, as I'm sure we'll deep dive into something else super interesting, but I haven't actually planned what. But thank you for listening. As always, you can find me on Instagram, TikTok and Spotify at chronically.m.e.